And we pray that our worship has been primarily focused upon the God that we have come to worship, our Creator and our Maker, and that we have come also to honor our Savior who died for us. The lessons that I want to present today are actually lessons that come by request. Two very special people have requested both the morning and afternoon lesson. This afternoon we'll be talking about family and finances, or perhaps a better title would be the Christian and money. We'll talk about that this afternoon. And I appreciate your interest, and I'm willing to share the thoughts with you as you have requested. If you take a walk through Barnes & Noble or Hastings, and you go through the family health section, you will notice that there are a number of books that have been written about marriage. How to make your marriage better. And yet, in spite of all the books that have been written by men, the marriage continues to be a problem in our society. And there are many people that take a rather fatalistic view of marriage. It sort of reminds me of a fellow that recorded a song back in my younger days named Gordon Lightfoot. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone, and I just can't get it back. There are many that have a very fatalistic approach to marriage. In fact, there are many in our society that believe if you actually have a stable home, that you're just one of the few lucky ones. And unfortunately, that idea almost ensures failure in many of the marriages of our time. And unfortunately, there are many Christians, people, God's people, who have taken on the perspective of marriage of our world and society. And there is a great deal of that dissatisfaction in those relationships. Dissatisfaction sometimes that is caused by the fact that we emphasize the silly and unimportant things rather than the important things that truly build for meaningful relationships. Thus, marriage may be viewed by a contrast. Karen Carpenter sang a song that was the high school senior class song of 1972 in Lancaster, "We've Only Just Begun." White lace and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our way. But unfortunately, the hope soon turns into despair of a sign that was written in a Hollywood jewelry store, wedding rings for rent. And it's not my intent today to add a burden to those who are sad about marriage. It's my intent today to give you hope that somehow your relationship can truly be better. And I'm going to tell you that the counsel that you need to receive from marriage is not the kind of advice that you would find in the family section in Hastings. You'll find that book in the religious section in Hastings. It's the book that comes from God. It is a book that comes from the man or the very one who designed the marriage relationship, our God and our Creator. You see, the Bible is a book about relationships. Foremost, it is a book about our relationship with God. But number two, it is also a book about our relationship with one another. And the principles that are contained in God's book are absolutely indispensable when it comes to understanding how to make a happy marriage. In fact, the greatest counsel and the greatest hope and encouragement is a statement that is recorded in the book of Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, 21 simple words. Therefore, a man shall leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. It is leaving that relationship and it is focusing upon the new life that they can have. And one can almost feel the exhilaration of Adam when the woman is brought to her and he says, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." Marriage can indeed be a tremendous blessing if we're willing to work at it. I want to tell you today that it is entirely possible for two committed disciples to have a happy marriage. Now, when I say committed, I don't mean those that are superficially committed to an assembly. I mean those that are not only committed to the assembly and God's people in His church, but also who are committed to God in their daily lives. if you're willing to work at it. It is entirely possible for two truly committed disciples to have a happy marriage. And I want to tell you this, that you need stronger ties than just feelings. To have that happy relationship, you need the Lord, who will help you to overcome the hurtful times, that will help you to have the staying power, not because you want to stay, but because you fear God and you know what God says, and therefore you intend to stay in that relationship. And because I understand and know that God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. I want to talk about the five loves of marriage. I think you probably already guessed that, haven't you? Love is a very powerful word. And it is a word that also is under my power. That is, I have control here. I can choose the kind of person that I want to be. And when I choose that as a husband, then in that way, I can indeed enhance the marriage relationship. So what are the five loves of marriage? Well, first of all, the first love of marriage is the love of desire. The Greek word is the Greek word epithumia. Actually, that word is used in a number of ways, and it means a strong and deep desire. In Galatians 5 and verse 24, it was used by Paul in a bad sense, referring to the fleshly passions and fleshly desires. But in Philippians chapter 1, verse 23, the same writer uses the word in a very positive way. He says, I have a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. And Jesus uses the same word in Luke chapter 22 and verse 15, when he refers to the fervent desire that he has to eat the Passover with his disciples before his death. So it really depends upon the context. And of course, what we're talking about here today is the physical desire that a man and woman have for each other. And unfortunately in our society, and not only in ours, but in generations gone by, this word has become an extremely ugly word. In fact, there is a story told in the book of 2 Samuel, the 13th chapter. There was a fellow by the name of Amnon who was the son of David. And he saw that his sister was lovely. And the text says that Amnon loved her. But it was a sick kind of love. And therefore he feigned that he was sick. And he called her in to care for him. And he forced her to bed. And then the text says that in the 15th verse, that Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. Therefore, society and man has made this physical desire for a man and a woman into a very ugly thing. But the reality is that it ought to be very beautiful, and can be very beautiful, in the context of a marriage. In the book of Proverbs, the 5th chapter, Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 5, in Proverbs chapter 5, and beginning with the 15th verse, notice what Solomon says about this kind of love. He says, drink water from your own cisterns and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of waters in the streets, let them be only for your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving deer and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and embraced in the arms of a seductress? When this kind of love is expressed within the context of those that are bound to each other by a covenant, the marriage covenant, when two people are committed to each other, this kind of love becomes very, very beautiful. Yet I'm going to tell you something else. You've heard me say before that the love of desire is probably within the top five needs of the male. Yet it is not the most important love of marriage. While it is a love that is to be unique in that relationship, and while, yes, it is very important, it is not the kind of love that will give your marriage staying power. There is another kind of love, and that love is the love of romance. It's this sweeping euphoria that makes us have this energy. There is this closeness and proximity to one another, this closeness to one another. And when we are close, we are energized. Oh, he makes me feel so important. And she makes me feel so valuable. Where did that love come from? Come from God. How do I know that? Because in the Song of Solomon, the second chapter, we have a love story. Song of Solomon is basically a love story. And in Song of Solomon chapter 2, and beginning with verse 10, we find that this young lady, the Shulamite girl, she is reflecting and thinking about all the wonderful things that her lover has said to her. And she says, "My beloved spoke and said to me, 'Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, in the clefts of the rocks, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely.'" I wish I was that poetic. Reality is I'm not. I don't know. I guess I suppose that I inherited more of the genes of the Jenkins, which is pretty matter of fact, rather than the genes of the Slover, which was pretty passionate. I have to work at it to be romantic. I'll be honest. But the reality is that this is an extremely important phase and love of marriage. God made us that way. Do you recall when Jacob met Rachel? That he was weeping and crying. He was in love with her. There is this energy about us. And we need to cultivate. And guys, you need to listen to me, because we're the ones that struggle with it more. We need to cultivate that kind of love in our marriage. The long stem rose, the sweet note, the card, the romantic evening, the candlelight dinner. All of these things are an important part of the marriage relationship, and they certainly need to be cultivated. But you can't build a lasting marriage on romance. It's interesting that the first two loves that we've talked about today are primarily unique to the marriage relationship. Yet they are not the most important love in that relationship that gives it lasting and staying power. The third love of marriage is the love of affection. The Greek word storge is the word that I have in mind. In fact, in the book of Romans, the first chapter, in the 31st verse, the Apostle Paul, enlisting the immorality and sins of the Gentiles, lists it in the negative way. He says, undiscerning, untrustworthy, and unloving. But in the book of Romans, the 12th chapter, the 10th verse, the Apostle Paul says, Romans chapter 12 and verse 10, Paul says, "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another." Kindly affectionate. The love of affection is this protective, sheltering tenderness. It is the consequence of being with each other and sharing our lives together. It is expressed in a simple way by the touch and by the hug. In fact, doctors have done studies in hospitals, and you have a set of patients. One half of them, maybe there is a simple handshake or touch. The others received the same care, but without the touch. And those who had no touch did not feel like that they were really cared for. The fact is that we need this kind of affection. We need to be hugged. And the reality is that women really, truly need to be hugged. They need to be touched. They need to be reminded that they are cared for. It's absolutely vital in making the marriage relationship successful. Women need to be held. And they need to be not in the intimate way, but in the sense of closeness and proximity. They need that tenderness and that affection. I've heard some guys say, well, you know, I'm just not that way. You need to learn to be that way. You need to try. You need to work at it. I'm going to give you a test. First of all, guys, you get that brand new truck, and you've had it about 2 days, and she takes it down to the grocery store, and she puts a dent in it. And she comes home and just says, I had a wreck and I've got to put a dent in your truck and it was my fault. How are you going to react? What's your reaction going to be? Ladies, your husband comes home tomorrow and says, honey, I've got some bad news. I lost my job. What's your reaction going to be? You see, there is this need of security that is expressed in affection. In fact, some have said that affection is the environment. The love of desire becomes the event. There's a lot of truth to that. But we certainly need that sense of security and that need to be held. And we need to cultivate that kind of love in the marriage relationship. And it's certainly important, but it's not the most important. We haven't got there yet. The fourth love of marriage is the love of friendship. Phileo, the love of mankind. You remember that Jesus loved John in that way. They were friends. It was not just agape. But they were friends. It is a love born of association. It is a love that is promoted by communication. Communication means to have things in common. To share things in common. To share life together. And I'm convinced that the greatest plague destroying marriage is the lack of and failure to communicate. Or when we do, we don't communicate in a proper way. Which means that sometimes that, ladies, you need to assert yourself and tell him how you feel. Guys, you need to listen. Or sometimes, guys, you need to assert yourself and tell her how you feel. And, ladies, the reality is that you also need to listen. Now, men and women are different in this way. The reality is that women are full of words, men are not. That's just the way it is. But nonetheless, we need to learn how to share these things in common. When a couple comes in and they say, we're going to get married. And after maybe a couple of sessions, it becomes a reality that the foundation of their relationship is this giddy feeling of we're just so in love and everything's going to be great and wonderful and life is just going to be so great. You know what? Red flag. That marriage is in trouble. That relationship is in trouble. But when a couple comes in and says, we're friends. We share a lot together. There are a lot of things that we have in common that we enjoy together. We just enjoy being with each other. Then I know that the relationship has a greater chance of success. the love of friendship. The reality is that men like to play. They have their toys they like to play with. And the reality is that ladies, they would like to share those toys with you. Whatever it is. It may be the deer lease, which you could care less about, or Monday night football. And the reality is that ladies, guys, men have, women have things they enjoy doing. It may be a day at the outlet mall. Well, just suck it up and go. You know, as they say, just go with her and enjoy it and learn to share things in common. And try to find some things in common that you can enjoy together. The fact is that this becomes one, but not the most important love of marriage. Finally, the final love of marriage is divine love. This is the kind of love that God had for me. It is expressed in simple words, for God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. I want you to think about that for a minute. Number one, this divine love died so that I could live. And number two, when it comes to God's love, this love took the initiative. And this love took the blame. In 1 John chapter 4 and in the 19th verse. In 1 John chapter 4 and in the 19th verse. I'm sorry. 1 John 3 verse 16. By this we know love, because He laid down His life for us, and we ought also to lay down our life for the brethren. This love took the initiative, and this love took the blame. Now I want you to think about that concept for a minute. First of all, God's love died. Jesus died so that I can live. Can you imagine how powerful that kind of love could be in a marriage? When I'm willing to die so that she can live. When I'm willing to unselfishly sacrifice my life for her, to give my whole to her and all to her, not because she deserves it, but because I care about her. Because she has a soul. Or by the same token. You know, yeah, he lost his job, and it may be because he just wasn't taking care of things. But he has a soul, and I still love him, and I care about him. Love died so that we could live. Love took the initiative. God took the initiative. God gave His Son so that I could live. And love took the blame. That is, Jesus died in my stead and in my place. He took the stroke that was due me and due us. And I'm going to tell you that if you have that kind of love, even when the affection is missing and the desire is missing and the romance is gone, by divine love, the marriage relationship can last. This is a love without reciprocation. It is not a love that is based upon the desire, based upon the worth, or whether or not the person is truly worthy of it, but rather it is based upon the value that that person has because they have a soul. You know, Jesus put it like this. Now, I hope that I'm not describing your marriage, but I do know a young man wherein which this relationship or this very term could have described his marriage. Jesus said, "Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you.
Do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the sons of your Father in heaven, for He makes His sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust." And in Ephesians, the fifth chapter, the Apostle Paul talks about the husband-wife relationship. In Ephesians chapter 5, first of all, in verse 21, he says, "Submitting to one another in the fear of God." What does that mean? How do I submit? It's because I always do what is best for her or him. Always. And furthermore, he says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her." This is not a love of emotion. It is an act of will. It is not because they are deserving, but because we care. He needs me, and she needs me. And because they need me, because they have a soul, I have this love of care and this love, the divine love, the kind of love that God had for us. You want your marriage to have lasting power, then you have to have that divine love in that relationship. And when the man and woman have that kind of love for one another, it can become a taste of heaven on earth. When you have that kind of love for each other, a taste of heaven on earth. You know, when I contemplate the number of times and ways in which I have disappointed God, I am grateful for the patience that He's had with me, for the grace and loving favor that He bestowed to me through the giving of His Son sacrificially so that I could have life. Maybe there's someone here today who understands that you're separated from God because of sin. You need to be reconciled to Him. And the only way you can do that is through the blood of Jesus. The only way. If you're willing to come in any way, we certainly would welcome that opportunity. We invite you to come as we stand and sing the song selected.